1959.
Okay, I'm looking at that clock.
Yes, you're watching it. 9 o'clock, all right. All right, so we'll call the investment committee meeting to order. Steve Alexander's running late, and hopefully Dave Siegel will be here, I haven't heard from him. We're all here, I'm gonna, today, I'm going to appoint temporarily Anthony Weber on investment committee, because otherwise, we only have three. He just sat at the PFM seminar and got his 8 hours, so he is eligible to vote. Oh, yay. Dave is here. All right.
Morning, Randy.
Can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
Make a motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Sykes is gonna give us the economic update.
Good morning, nice to see everyone. I wanted to start out first by updating you on an announcement that we made aware of in terms of it. It was released in December 16th. But essentially, Ridgeworth, in partnership with our majority shareholder, which is Lightyear Capital, we've entered into an agreement where we'll be acquired by Virtus Investment Partners. And the deal is expected to close mid-2017. Virtus is based out of Hartford, Connecticut, and they are a publicly traded multi-boutique asset management firm. So they have 4 autonomous investment firms underneath their holding company, very similar to the structure that we're under, where Ridgeworth is our holding company, and we have 3 registered investment advisory firms underneath that. So, Virtus, their sole business is asset management. And the thing is, as it relates to Lightyear Capital, which is our majority shareholder, that is actually private equity. And typically, with private equity, the holding period's about 3 to 7 years. And so, with this transaction, we'll be with a firm with permanent capital, a permanent home, if you will. Virtus has, at the end of the year, $45.4 billion under management, and Ridgeworth, our holding company, has $40.2. So, combined, we'll be at about $85.6. And you can see Sykes, we're at about $28 billion. So we're gonna be the largest boutique underneath the Virtus umbrella as it relates to AUM. We plan to keep our offices as noted in the bottom. And Sykes will remain autonomous within the structure. And I wanted to show you the various investment personnel, our investment process, our philosophy. Jim Keegan is our CIO and chairman. He will remain in place and will report to George Allward, who is the CEO of Virtus. And so, there's a strong alignment as far as interest of the key employees within the structure. They have employment agreements, rolled equity, equity incentives. So, Virtus has 4 boutiques, Kane, Anderson, Rubnik, Duff and Phelps, those are both equity-focused. They have a fixed income boutique called New Fleet Asset Management, but it's more of a multi-sector asset management structure that's different than what is under Sykes. And then Rampart is a quant fund, kind of quant shop. So, with that said, just wanted to make you aware of that. We have sent consent to Tiffany Kimball and your legal, been in touch with Mary Ann and John about that. And we feel like the transaction will be, you know, seamless from your perspective and is looked upon, you know, favorably, especially within the community as far as being able to maintain your autonomous structure and your investment process and philosophy. Are there any questions as it relates to this? The main thing is Virtus is interested in us as Virtus, their AUM is a bit more retail focused and Sykes is more institutional focused, so there can be some synergies there. In addition, when you're looking at a holding company structure, basically you have all your HR, your finance and systems and so forth at a holding company level, and there can be duplicate functions, so that's where other synergies can be had. Okay. I thought it was important to show that, and I should have put it at the beginning, and I didn't, and I'm sorry. So let me get to the performance. Oh my goodness. How do I do that?
It's okay.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Big mistake. Which should we go to? So we have performance up here, and just kind of to talk about the investment environment and what has led to the performance. The market in the fourth quarter was certainly dominated by the win of Donald Trump. Investors began to quickly pivot from this pre-election view that feared a Trump victory, and it pivoted to a post-election narrative that was more of expectations for pro-growth business, and it would be driven more by fiscal policy as opposed to monetary policy that we've seen in place since 2008 that's been fairly ineffective as far as growth in the economy, because we've just kind of mowed along. So certainly within the wee hours of the after the election, the market sold off, treasury markets rallied, and as we moved into November the 9th, by the afternoon, we had already made up that ground. There was a risk rally going on. The treasury markets had sold off. And the rebound was a bit faster than one would anticipate. The S&P from November 8th to the end of the year was up about 5%. Longer term fixed income benchmarks were actually off about 3%, negative 2.1% since the election to the end of the year. Certainly it gives you indications of how quickly the turnaround was, similar to what we saw with Brexit in June, where it took about 2 days for the market to digest that news, but then quickly kind of shrugged it off and moved on. We certainly feel with some of these political events that have taken place, even with the Italian referendum, that the markets appear to be a little complacent with regards to this. In December, we had the Fed raise the short-term interest rate target by 25 basis points, and this certainly was a bit anticlimactic. Given where we saw at the beginning of 2016, the Fed was expecting about 4 rate hikes. And this was the one and only hike for 2016. And the last hike was, as you recall, December of 2015. So as we progress through the year and you kind of look at it, it seems like a lifetime ago when we saw the lows of the 10-year Treasury in July that hit an intraday low of about a 133. So we've had a lot of upturn in the market, and if you look year over year at the 10-year, the differential is only about 18 basis points. But if you look at just this quarter, the 10-year was actually up about 85. And if you focus in from the election to the end of the year, 58 basis points of that 85 basis point increase was during from November 8th to the end of the year. The upturn in rates was much more dramatic on the longer end of the curve as opposed to the shorter end. You can see the 2-year was up about 43 basis points, and the differential from November, the election, to the end of the year, 33 of the 43 was during that time period. The 5-year was up 78. So with this upturn in interest rates and more of it on the longer end as opposed to the shorter end, it was a bit more moderated, but across the curve, there was, you know, bigger increases in interest rates. The curve did steepen moderately. And just so you know, the 10-year went from a 159 at the end of the third quarter to a 244. With this uptick in interest rates, we also saw the dollar strengthen and actually hit a 14-year high. On this page, you can see that for the fourth quarter, the return was down 1.95%, the benchmark, which is the Merrill Lynch 1 to 10-year domestic master, was down 2. So we were ahead by 5. Just to give an indication, given the curve and so forth, a 1 to 5-year type of return was down about 1%, and a longer-term benchmark, like the Barclays Ag event, was down about 3. So this is intermediate in nature, and a lot of intermediate benchmarks were down about 2%. Okay. So for the year, the return was 2.14, the benchmark at 2.01, so we were ahead by 13. And you look at the 5-year, and we're ahead by 33, 10-year by 29. We were off just slightly in the 3-year time period. If you look at the next page, essentially the lower the quality, the higher return. So high yield returns did extremely well. If you had triple B exposure, triple B's did better than higher quality triple A's. And in this case, the returns were certainly driven by our energy exposure. You can see that we're a bit heavier weighted in industrials, and certainly those names such as, let's see, we had Apache, Marathon Oil, Devon, Spectra Partners, and so those names certainly helped us. The market value was at $55.4 million. Duration's neutral to the benchmark at about 4.2. One interesting thing is with this uptick in interest rates, the yield on the portfolio went from a 158 to 2.24, so an increase of about 66 basis points, and the average credit quality was AA. We're about equal weight if you look at the market value to the benchmark, if you look at treasury exposure, a little bit overweight on a contribution to duration. Looking at agencies, we always tend to be underweight or avoid that sector, given that we prefer to have more exposure in the securitized space, which you can see that we're overweight there and from a contribution to duration basis. We have reduced our corporate exposure by about 2%, again, still favoring industrials. And on the securitized side, we reduced our exposure about 3%, and of that, about 2.5% came from the CMBS, ABS sector, and that's because it was a bit rich, if you will. One thing that we did within the securitized space is we did an up-end coupon trade where we had a lot of agency mortgages with coupons of 3 to 3.5%, and we sold those and moved more into 4 to 4.5% because of the richness. You look at the next page, we have our compliance, and we were within the guidelines with all of the various items noted as far as limitations and sector allocations, and we really are not coming close to breaching those limitations.
Just the asterisk concerning the...
This is one of the situations where there's security that is, it's just to note for you all that it's got a split rating, but it's triple B. When we look at corporates, it's a three-pronged process. We look at fundamentals, technicals, evaluation. From a fundamental standpoint, it's a mild negative in the fact that we're still seeing a deterioration in the credit cycle. Leverage is at a 15-year high, and you can see that on this page. In addition, with the various Trump initiatives, we're at a point from fundamentally where we need to sort out what will be winners and losers. And there's not a lot of clarity yet. So with that, that's why we do have a mild negative. From a technical standpoint, we've had a strong foreign demand for U.S. corporate debt because of divergent central bank policies outside of the U.S. So there's still strong demand there. Corporate issuance has been very strong. 2016 was a record year. We expect 2017 to be at about $350 billion, and so not as strong as 2016, but still fairly high. And then from a valuation standpoint, we look at corporate option adjusted spreads. And within this sector, we ended at a 123, and that's the differential between treasuries and corporates. The average was about a 136. So we're inside of the average, but keeping in mind the low was 51 basis points. So we're still, in this case, in general, within our longer-term accounts, we're going to be slightly overweight. In this account, we're slightly under because we're using more mortgages with, based upon the benchmark that we have. So it's not to say that we don't like corporates, but we're just being mindful right now and being cautious as to our placement. We continue to like basic industry, brokerage, and energy, which has done quite well for us. And then lastly, I wanted to, I wanted to point out here, just so you can see, the 10-year was at a 227, ended at 244, change was about 18. I mean, the two-year change was 14. But we hit the lows, all-time lows, and came back up close to where we ended in 2015. And then lastly, I wanted to update you on what we have talked to you about in the past as far as lower for longer. And one thing that we're still focusing in on is that there are still these structural forces in place. And that's the basis for our thesis, that we still have excessive debt, aging demographics, excess global capacity, and low productivity. There's no quick fix for this. They're all very deflationary in nature. Certainly, we have a pro-growth agenda where, if you look at it, it could be thought as far as being inflationary, needing to issue more debt with, line one to know that rates could go up. With that, we had stated that we felt like the 10-year would be trading in a range of 1.5% to 2%. And so if it was exceeding outside those boundaries, we thought it would be on the lower end. We saw that in the summer when we hit the lows for the 10-year. But we have expanded that bound after the election from 1.5% to 2.5%. Just more so than the fact of these thoughts as far as expectations and not the fact that we actually have those in place. So with that, you've got tax cuts, infrastructure spending, regulatory reform, and the timing of those are uncertain. The details about them are still not clear, and certainly there can be risks there. As it relates to these various reforms, we're certainly more constructive as far as regulatory reform as it could affect small business, because small business comprises, you know, about 80% of the jobs in the marketplace, and there's about 23.5 million jobs in the 24 to 55 year age bracket that people are still out of work. And so with that, if you've got some regulatory reforms as far as health care, Obamacare, small business can benefit from that, tax cuts could help. And certainly that is a sector where we could see a driver to the economy. And the question would be, can these fiscal responses overpower the structural forces that are still in place and entrenched in our economy? Certainly, if you look at what will drive the economy, you've got labor force and productivity of the labor force. And certainly, as we talked about the reform, business reform can certainly help. And the drivers for long-term interest rates are economic growth and inflation expectations. So at this point in time, you know, we feel that for 2017, there's certainly sentiment that there could be economic growth, but it's more psychological right now as opposed to it actually being implemented, and we don't see that having an impact until the earliest 2018, but could be beyond. So we still think that there could be these secular forces that will remain a bit of an obstacle to keep a cap on interest rates. In addition, we feel that there's going to be a volatility in the marketplace. I mean, we've got a lot of other external forces taking place as far as Europe. There's elections that will be taking place in the Netherlands, France, and Germany. And so that could cause some noise in the market. In addition, from a European banking, their systems are certainly much more undercapitalized than the U.S. And it's fragmented. If you look at Italy, Italy's about one-fifth of their economy has non-performing loans. I mean, the amount of non-performing loans is equivalent to about one-fifth of their economy. And certainly that we have China, where their growth has slowed, and the currency reserves are certainly putting pressure on the yuan. And then the last thing that we're watching is with the Fed, there's two vacancies right now that Trump certainly can fill as it relates to the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. Three of the voting members for 2016 have rolled off, and they were a bit more hawkish as wanting to raise rates or so forth, constructive for that. And the makeup of the board right now currently has a bit more of a dovish tilt to it. So I guess to summarize, the narrative is a shift more to fiscal policy versus monetary policy. And, we'll see, there's certainly a pro-growth agenda going on, but we still feel that there's secular problems still in place. And for us to see benefits from that or impact as it relates to our economy, it'll be about 2018 before it's actually in notation.
And the
there any questions?
Thank you, very important.
He's too dated.
Motion to approve.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. If I can go back to when I mentioned I had added Anthony, I want to let everybody know that is allowable under our investment policy. All right, thank you, Kim. And now we're going to hear from Sawgrass.
So, well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
That was a wonderful recap by Sykes. I don't really have too much to add from an economic standpoint. It was really a very eventful quarter. I think last time we met, it was the Monday prior to the elections. And a lot has changed. A number of times I mentioned that I thought the market was somewhat underestimating the impact of a Trump victory. I think that was certainly the case. I don't think it was to the extent, or I don't think it was the move that many expected would happen, if that were to happen. But I do think that as that unfolded, there was always some surprise in the market and how the rest of the quarter unfolded. Certainly plays, and I will definitely get into that. Again, a lot of the same aspects that we've already covered, so I don't want to get reiterate too much. But again, this is just our.
Go to the view, yes. And then you can choose to go screen or in your data. You got it.
Okay, this is just our one pager. If you ever want to go back and just read about some of the kind of a recap that we put together, but I'll touch on all of these points, but more how the market reacted, some of the current events and our portfolio and what helped, what hurt, but I will certainly touch on all these points as we go along. Just a quick recap in terms of performance for the quarter. We outperformed by about 41 basis points. As already been mentioned, it was a fairly negative tone in the bond market in the short index. The index was down about 1%. That was certainly longer, upwards of 3% when you get to the broader benchmark, and that was the biggest downturn you've had in over 25 years. So it was, a very volatile, very eventful quarter, one not seen in quite some time. That type of environment is what we really expect to, on a relative basis, perform very well in the way we're positioned, being short duration, being conservative. So it is a move that we had somewhat expected for some time. I mentioned we expect rates to move up. We did not expect it to happen at the rate that it did. One of the gentlemen argued, and we also believe that it probably went a little bit too fast, too soon. And I think that's kind of played out since that initial move. You've seen a little bit more of a balance now, the way rates have reacted. But we did expect some kind of move for quite some time. And that's what we saw in the fourth quarter. So our performance is about what we expected. On a one-year basis, we outperformed about 19 or 20 basis points. Over a five-year, about 27 basis points annualized. So, we're happy with the performance, and we think we're positioned well for the market going forward. I've mentioned this before, and I think it's important to mention again, we're still sitting in one leg of the market cycle. Going on now, approximately 7 years of really one move up or one trend up. I think the difference now, one thing to point out is that, as already been mentioned, we had really the last 7 years a bull market driven by monetary policy. We had the Fed really pumping money into the system, keeping rates extremely low, and that was really assisting the economy to a certain point. We had growth, a very tepid growth. We didn't really have the economy shooting off on all cylinders. What we may see now with a bit of a shift in policy is go from monetary to fiscal policy. As that sets in, we'll go from one leg of the market cycle potentially to an extension of that market cycle, but for very different reasons. So we wrote the belief that at some point, the bull market can't persist, there will be a downturn at some point. We still do believe that. However, it may be somewhat extended, again, just for different reasons. There's a lot of pro-growth policies that could be enacted, and that could certainly help the economy, and we could see continuation of this bull cycle. Deutsche Bank somewhat facetiously mentioned 30 simple, they put in quotes, simple issues facing us in 2017. These are very non-simple issues. These are domestic and global in nature. So there are a lot of things that we're dealing with right now, and honestly, by the end of the year, this could expand to 50 to 100. There's going to be things out here we don't even think about at this point. So there's a lot. There's domestic issues. There's global issues. You mentioned that the European elections, that could have some kind of impact. But already we've already seen some of these issues take place: infrastructure spending, healthcare changes, U.S.-Mexico. It's going to be a lot of things we're going to deal with, and the question is going to be, how do you deal with that? And really, it's not just a matter of predicting these things, as hard as that is. As we saw, as I mentioned, with the Trump victory, you could have predicted it the right way, and you still could have gotten the trade wrong. Because I think the way it reacted wasn't as a lot of people expected. So it's very hard to, A, predict what's going to happen in the world, and then B, also predict what the markets are going to do in reaction to those moves. And I think we saw that in 2016, as had been mentioned, I saw a quote here, it was touched on before, but after Brexit, it took 3 days for the markets to shake it off. With Trump, it took about 3 hours, and Italy, it took about 3 minutes. So the way the market's reacting now to these fairly populist events has really become a lot more muted, I guess, over time. With Brexit, I remember we talked about it, it was about 3 days to a week or so for the market to kind of start to normalize. With the election, it was overnight. We went to sleep at, you know, maybe 2, 3 in the morning, and the markets were, the stock markets were tanking, and the bond market was rallying pretty heavily. By the time you woke up, it had reversed itself completely, and then, you know, that day kind of took off and kept going for the rest of really the month, until about, you know, mid-December almost. The referendum was something that was somewhat priced in already. And again, it's not a domestic issue, but still, that type of event would probably have a bigger impact if it was in prior years. These days, the market kind of, you know, somewhat snoozed it off. So again, it's really hard to dictate what's going to happen and then how you position yourself. And for us, we take a step back and we say, what's our investment process? You know, we certainly have thoughts on the economy and the events that are going to happen, but we look more long term, and we say, how are these things going to play out? Not so much in the short term. We're not going to trade day-to-day to that extent, but we want to see what's going to be the impact long-term. Don't get too caught up in day-to-day volatility. And really, touching on volatility, this somewhat really shows how much volatility there was at some of those time periods. Just the two outliers you see were both Brexit and the Trump election. These are pretty massive moves you see in a one-day and a weekly basis. This is a daily change in the U.S. 10-year. So upwards of 15, 20 basis points just in around those same time periods, that's a very big move. And that's not really something that we're used to. So it's hard to prepare on those day-to-day swings. You don't want to overreact. A lot of times you see those moves and then it goes the other way, you know, very quickly. So it's really important to take a step back, have a long-term view, and not get too caught up in that. But again, very eventful year. We'll see how that plays going forward. Just from an economic standpoint, I mentioned some of the tepid growth, but a lot of the trends we saw continued. You saw a positive job growth. You saw unemployment rate going down. There's more behind the unemployment number, certainly for sure, but as a benchmark number, you did see that number coming down. You saw continued job growth, you know, almost at 175,000 on average over the year. We just saw another print this month for 227,000 jobs. Now, what's interesting is, as a lot of times we see now, every time there's a good number, there's something that counters that. So we had a big job number, but then we had revisions behind that for prime months when jobs actually were taken away. We had unemployment tick up. We had wage growth somewhat take a step back. And normally when we see positive job growth, the next logical step is positive wages and inflation. And we haven't so much seen that. So it's a bit of a Goldilocks economy right now, where it's somewhat hot, somewhat cold, and it's very hard to really disseminate where the market's going with your good news and your bad news always countering that. But the continued slow growth, I would call it, is what we've still been seeing. The question is going to be, how does that continue going forward with some of the policies that we're seeing enacted? I mentioned the wages, but really the real story is the last month. Wages still trending in the right direction, but not to the degree I think that people had expected it for inflation to really start to rear its head. It's already been mentioned, but this is just to give an idea that this is a 5-year, but we're in a short benchmark, but just to give an idea of the kind of move that you saw, pretty drastic, almost 80 basis points for the quarter. That certainly was driven by, you saw about the low 120s right prior to the election, and that really started to move up after that. You actually saw it tick up, I remember we sat here last time, and I said the market was not so much pricing it in. I was thinking of treasuries ticking up at the time, only at a certain point, thinking that it's going to be the same policies, and you'll see a little bit of rates moving up as we saw, the Fed would raise rates in December. Did not expect this type of move in the event that we saw again, but that's what happened, and you know, I think the pro-growth policies really took the forefront. A lot of people, I think, were initially paying more attention to that and not so much the downside risk that we've seen a little bit more lately. People were a lot more confident. And we'll see how that it's, you know, goes going forward. I think a lot of the, I'm going to call it rational, but again, all these rational pro-growth policies can really help the economy. But there's always going to be some concern about what's going to come out next in terms of our international relations, some of the things we're seeing as well. So again, it's somewhat hard to discern what's going to happen going forward. This is just the whole Treasury curve, as I already mentioned, but we did see a steepening along the curve. If you're more involved in the longer intermediate and more core, longer type of products, you had more of an impact. But we did see a steepening, and that is a sign of pro-growth and inflation going forward. What helped us was our overweight in credit. We saw, again, a risk on is going to help those spreads in the corporate bond market. That certainly helped us. We've been over in credit for quite some time. Even at tight spreads, the additional yield you can pick up, additional spreads you pick up on corporates is very beneficial. So as rates move up, that's typically a sign of a stronger economy. So we think that'll continue in the corporate bond market. The question is then, make sure you're positioned in the right place. We always remain high quality. We've been overweight financials. That's been a benefit to us. I'll get into that a little bit, but that was certainly a benefit for us in the fourth quarter as risk assets rallied. Financials did okay for the quarter, I think not as well as maybe people had expected. One of the big themes we've seen is policies of potential deregulation. And that is very good for banks in general, it could be very good for banks in general, but a lot of that is more on the equity side. You'll see a lot higher return on equity from a bondholder standpoint. It's not, I'm going to say it's negative, but it's not going to be as positive. It means banks can take on a little bit more risk. They may not hold as much in capital requirements. That could be negative for bondholders. I think we'll see in the end what actually comes out of this deregulation. We've seen mentions of Dodd-Frank already, but that is more of the House and Congress are going to debate on that. So I think what you'll see is some tweaks. You won't see any drastic repeal from that standpoint. But that could be, from a bondholder standpoint, it's not necessarily great news. However, if you're in the high-quality money center banks that already have an abundance of capital in their books, and they've done that over the last 8 years, they've already built this reserve up. I don't think they're going to necessarily deplete that reserve. As long as you stay high-quality, and for us, especially in this product, you stay pretty short maturity, there's really not much risk there from that standpoint. As already been mentioned, the triple B's are really what rallied the more riskier type names that we're not necessarily going to be involved in, especially the energy type names. Again, we veer towards high quality. So while we did well from a sector standpoint, being overweight credit, the individual risky asset classes we tend to avoid. And one thing, look on the left, this is just an indication of how much spreads have tightened. If you focus on the from 50 to 75 to about, you know, 125 to 150 basis points from where you were in 2015 in the blue to the yellow in 2016, you see a lot more, higher percentages in the yellow for 2016. So what that really says is a lot of these names and issuers have moved from wider spreads down to really be centered in that middle section where there's a lot tighter spreads. So that gives an indication of how important security selection is. Whereas prior to this year, really for the last couple of years, it was a bit of rising tides, just lifting all boats. As long as you were in corporate bonds, you probably did pretty well. Now it's really a matter of being in the right ones. You want to be careful to pick the right issuers and the right corporate bonds. So that's going to certainly be important in the future. This is talking about new issuance. I think it's continued to expand, and that's potentially a negative on more supply. It could be a negative for corporate bonds. I think what we may see now, one interesting point, is the ability to repatriate assets or repatriate cash coming from overseas. We just saw Apple and Microsoft hit the negotiation market, and they already have an abundance of cash, but the reason they do it is all their cash is overseas. You got Apple with $250 billion in cash overseas, and Microsoft has about $100 billion. So they can still raise debt here at cheap rates and not worry about repatriating that cash at higher tax rates right now. If that changes, and I think we may see that with tax reform, that they can bring that over at, let's call it 10%, you know, at one time, repatriate that cash here. They don't have as much need at that point to raise that debt. And that's going to be a cost. Those are two your names I mentioned, because they're very popular names with a lot of cash. That's pretty standard across, you know, all companies. They can bring that cash over. So that would mean net issuance would probably start to decrease, and that wouldn't be as much of a technical factor in the market. So it's something we always keep an eye on, and something that I think that would be interesting to watch how that plays out. Just an idea, look at the quarter. This is just the asset classes. Some of the drastic moves we saw, the long bond being down over 11%, the 5 to 10-year treasury being down, you know, almost 4.5%. So really, it was a move we hadn't seen in quite some time, and I think a lot of people were probably surprised from a bond standpoint how negative the markets can go. This is just kind of, you know, again, just our performance looking back over time. From a portfolio standpoint, we remain short duration, about 75%. We've kind of been beating that drum for a while now, but we did expect rates to move up. Somewhat muted in the whole fourth quarter, again, was that the Fed had raised rates. And we talked for so long, it was the Fed. It was a top story. They somewhat got pushed to the background with everything else that went on, but they did go ahead and raise rates. It's expected that they raise rates again 2 to 3 times in 2017. We would expect probably September and the end of the year. I think there's a chance for June, but I don't think that's very likely, especially with the recent numbers that came out. So we would expect about another 2 hikes that we see from the Fed. So, you know, with all the policies being enacted and the Fed raising rates, we would expect, rates to continue to tick up, not to the extent that they have, but we believe our short duration will still pay off and protect the principal. To the compliance, in which we are fully in compliance at this point. No problems there. The Fed dots we touched on before. What's interesting is we have the red and the blue line dictate where the market is pricing things in. That has historically been, in recent history, that's always been on the lower end. And I mentioned if the market gets that wrong, everything in between is basically getting it wrong. There's a lot of gap there. You see, that gap has really moved up now. The market's getting a lot more in line with what the Fed is saying. For so many years, it was Fed speak, and the market just wasn't buying it. That rates were going to move up. You've seen that change now. They raised rates again. They expected to do it 2 or 3 more times. And you saw how much rates moved in the market in the fourth quarter. So that gap is not so much there anymore, and you're seeing a lot more of the market believing what the Fed is saying. That's pretty bullish for the economy. This is just, I've kind of gone through this before, but it's the 5-year and the rate hikes. And what this is basically saying is you want to be ahead of the curve. And I think we're almost at the point now where it's hard to say that, but this is somewhat the rationale of why we remain short duration while you work for some time. As the 5-year moves up, as the Fed rates move up, the bond market usually typically a little bit behind it. You want to be positioned before the market actually moves up, and make sure you take advantage of that. This is all the historical rate hikes and how the market reacted to it. From a scenario analysis standpoint, we always go through this, but just to touch on, column 4 and 5, if rates move up 50 to 100 basis points, I mentioned what the Fed may do. In those types of environments, we would expect to outperform. You could see further negative territory for the bond market. If that happens, again, we believe it's our beliefs to protect principal at all costs. So that's what we plan to do. So if that were to continue, we would certainly be positioned well for that and on a relative basis, at least, to outperform. And even if that doesn't happen, in some other scenarios, we expect to be somewhat benchmark-like and even still outperform in some cases. So we believe we're positioned very well. And that's just a listing of your holdings, and that'll end my presentation. Any questions?
Thank you, David.
Thank you. I'll make a motion to approve.
So moved.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
I don't presume. Did you say aye?
Well, good morning, everybody. I made it through the fog this morning, which was pretty dangerous, and I also brought Leslie Allison with me today. I want to introduce her today. She is our lead person for the Florida Education Investment Trust Fund and works with us in the Orlando office. Well, I think we covered the economy pretty well. I think my colleagues from other firms have did a pretty extensive job in going through a lot of details, so I don't want to bore you with a whole lot of market information, but I really want to focus on what are we doing for the portfolio and what are our concerns for the portfolio. I think that's probably the most impactful discussion we could have at this point. Because what's really concerning for you is what does your first line of defense look like once you go through the bank accounts and your short-term money market accounts? What does a short-term portfolio look like? Which is our mandate to be that first line of liquidity defense, if you will, if you do need the cash for unexpected needs, and what's our position to do that? I think what we can all agree to is that we did see interest rates rise. If you look at 2016 in the blue yield curve versus just September of this year, 16, and December of 2015, you can see pretty much December of 2016, we saw the yield curve most likely above all the historical, and more so in the short area where we have, where we saw most of the impact of the rising interest rates. And that's something we've been expecting for some time. In fact, I think we all can agree we're getting kind of tired of talking about when the Fed's going to raise the rates, how many times they're going to raise rates. And now, of course, they two times now in 2 years, both in December. So that's been an interesting situation. The last quarter, we prepared ourselves for this. I think it was probably the most transparent Fed increase we've had in a long time. It was pretty much, I think we all can agree that we pretty much expected this one to come in this year's December 16 Fed increase. We didn't expect what the election results would be. I think that was a wild card for everybody there. But we did have a pretty good feeling that the Fed was going to raise rates. We prepared ourselves for it. We harvested some capital gains in the quarter, positioning ourselves for rising interest rates. We want to go ahead and realize those gains for you because obviously with rising interest rates, we would lose those potential gains. So we went and harvested those and prepared ourselves for that. On the next slide, you will see kind of the results. Oops, go too fast. When you just look at total return across the board, I don't have everything listed here as far as, oops, I guess you do touch it, it does move. You can go one more back. Thank you so much, I guess I won't touch the screen. Yes, my big iPad. But you can see across the board, here's the total returns for the month the quarter ending December 31st, 2016. Everything was negative. I mean, the rates went up, the whole bond market went negative. So this is a situation we want to avoid, and as I think everybody discussed, Corpus did the best as far as its attribute to the overall return. There's really two things that were significant. One, of course, was the corporate holdings. And I think, as David said, it's not just the corporate sector, but it's the individual corporate holdings that you have to be really careful about. That's a significant play. More so now, I think, in the current time and into the future, that will be an important aspect. What industries are going to be doing better in the next 5 years? That's going to play a very big part in corporate note selection because depending on tax reform, depending on capital expenditure, depending on the corporate issue and bond market, that's going to make a really an important part of corporate note selection as opposed to just being in the corporate sector. But we did see also duration obviously played a big part to the return. Longer durations obviously had a longer, had a larger negative return than short duration. We positioned ourselves, we did have a negative return, but we did outperform the benchmark because we were a little bit shorter, and the corporates helped us offset that differential as well as actually harvesting some of the gains. So that played a really big role in the last quarter of 2016. We're probably in the camp that possibly maybe two Fed increases in 2017, but I do think that introducing different fiscal policies could play a role in changing a lot of our predictions that I don't think we yet understand yet. I think there's so much potential change in the fiscal policy, whereas monetary policy is probably maxed out. I think we'll probably have seen the various tools that could be utilized from a monetary standpoint, and I think now we're going to see the fiscal policies play in. Maybe not so much in 2017, because I think there's a lot of structural things that have to take place to really have that impact. But I think in the upcoming years, fiscal policies will dictate a lot about the economy going forward. So from our standpoint, there's a good potential of maybe one or two Fed increases this year. From a strategy standpoint, we'll maintain a strategy a little bit less the duration of the benchmark. We want to preserve your market value as we move into this situation. Looking right at the portfolio, we'll look right into it here. You can see the credit quality, sector allocation, and the maturity distribution, as well as the main portfolio statistics associated with the portfolio. We had a yield at market by 148. Our duration's about 177 or so. The benchmark is running about 180, 182, depending on what month it is. We have been staying a lot closer to that. We went a little bit shorter in this last quarter, in the 2016, for defensive purposes. That had worked out well for you to bring it down a little bit lower. And from an average credit quality from an S&P standpoint, we're about a double A. From a performance standpoint, you can see that we were about a negative 33 basis points. Certainly nothing to be excited about, since I think everybody's about in that situation. But we were a little bit better than the benchmark from that perspective. Even the amount of return for the last quarter, the whole year was still 125 versus the benchmark of 89. So. It's important that down capture ratio is strong in a situation like this. We don't want to be obviously as low as the benchmark when it's negative, because it doesn't have an impact to the overall return. So from a whole 12-month period, it's pretty solid above the benchmark, and then you can see across 3, 5, and 10 since inception is pretty consistent. And here's just the accounting of it. You can see what the rising rates have did to the change in market value, as well as the portfolio earnings on a market value as opposed to amortized cost basis. Sector allocation. We did make some changes here in the portfolio. If you look in the detail holdings of this portfolio report, you'll see the buys and sells that took place prior to the end of the quarter. Preparing ourselves to really kind of move this duration a little bit. And also, we did unload some corporates, giving us some room so we can have some additional buying power in 2017, depending on where we want to be as far as corporate issuance going forward. And this is evident here in the slice report. If you see going back to March of 2016, you can see how the portfolio has migrated from quarter to quarter to December of 2016. Interesting enough is that federal agencies have been actually a little more attractive than we originally anticipated. We really kind of thought that we would have less agencies and more treasuries going forward with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's decline of bond issuance, but we actually see more value right now in the agency market than we have really anticipated. Corporate right now is really about 38% as far as this quarter, but I think we're about 43% right now. We'll probably leave a little room for more corporate purchases as we see if corporate issuance takes a little bit more uptick here in the upcoming year or so. Mature distribution up against the benchmark, which is the 1-3. You can see how it lays out in the gray bars versus your portfolio. Our 9.4 is really what we're utilizing for rising interest rates. If we think that rates are going to be rising, we'll make use, of course, of that allocation that is really kind of more between 6 and 9 months. And that would become available to us if we see rates rising. So that's kind of our ammunition from that standpoint. When you break down the contribution to the actual duration, you'll see where the vast majority of the 1.77 comes from in terms of years. Obviously, most of it is coming from the 2 to 3 year area. But obviously, it's offset by the distribution we have. From a credit quality, obviously a very high credit quality. We only have about 9.4 in BBB plus. The rest is spread out throughout the portfolio. And of course, as being in a short-term portfolio, we do have about 54.3% in AA plus from an S&P standpoint. The issuer distribution, your top five holdings in the portfolio are listed out here. So it's home loans, treasuries, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and then Citigroup pretty much rounds out the top five. And then you can also see the top 10 holdings represents about 64% of the portfolio. And then let me get down here to the compliance pages. When you look at the compliance from an asset allocation, everything was in compliance with the investment policy as far as all the asset allocations are concerned. And then as far as the issuers, you'll see that the corporate holdings are well diversified with minimum exposure to any one of the individual corporate issuers, well below the 5% requirement. We will probably see, I think, a more robust corporate issuers taking place in the upcoming years if we do see some fiscal policy changes and if the economy grows a little bit more and we have a little more inflation. So I think that'll be more robust discussions as we go forward into 2017. So I think in summary, the quarter was basically dictated by the rate increase, if I get that out. That had a big effect on the overall return of the portfolio, and our strategy was in place to kind of smooth that out a little bit for you, and we're ready for the next quarter as we're still a little bit short of the benchmark, and that probably most likely will be the story of 2017. To get a little more clarity what the economy is going to do and what the Fed may possibly do. But I do think the story is going to shift more fiscal than it is monetary, and we'll probably have a little less discussion about the Federal Reserve. So that's our portfolio report today for you, and I hopefully can answer any questions you may have.
Anybody?
Nope.
Good, thank you.
Okay. Motion to approve?
Second. All right. That's right.
So we roll it?
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to take kind of the macro overview. What's really going on. I usually don't stop on this page on my report, but I thought it was this time, even though you've seen the numbers here, it's just a little clearer, I think. And if you look at this capital markets review, if you look at the indexes that started with Barclays Capital 1 to 3 year government and run from there down to the Barclays Capital Aggregate Bond Index, you really can get a feel for how the total bond market is affected by the increase in rates during the period in question. Also, you can see how we really reside in the upper part of that block of information, the 1-3 to the intermediate credit type area, intermediate gov credit. And so essentially, even in an index environment where there was no fee drag, there was no cost, there was no, the negative numbers were the order of the day. So if anyone was concerned about that here in the committee, you know, again, that's the world we're living in right at the moment. I just wanted to reiterate that for everyone. This is the fixed income composite. We've got approximately $181 million in the managed accounts. The internal account is $51 million, and approximately $51 million, or $233 million. We made that change on the report from money market. This is a summary page of the returns. Again, we start with the beginning value of $183 million. We had net flows, positive flows, of approximately $38,000. Investment losses were $1,765,425. That left us an ending value of $181,658,271. So, again, unfortunately, there was a situation of unrecognized or unrealized loss, but that is what it is. As we look at trailing returns for the 1 year calendar period, the portfolio returned 1.63%, which beat our benchmark, policy benchmark, by 1.52%. The difference was 12 basis points. And again, that number would be net of all fees. That's not being reported at a gross figure. Moving down to the next block of information, for the quarter, the account returned negative 0.96%, and that was against the policy benchmark of negative 1.14. So we actually beat that by 17 basis points. Down to the lower part of the graph or the page, you can see that our returns in up markets were returning approximately 97.7% of the upside and picking up about 84% of the downside. So again, that's positive. That's where you want to be. These graphs illustrate during four different time frames, the 1 year, the 3 year, the 5 year, and since inception. And you can see where your portfolio, which is the blue triangle, resides in terms of these matrix. And really, looking at the one-year graph, very clearly, your portfolio is residing in the upper left-hand corner, which is where you want to be. You're getting excess return for very minimal risk, and your managers are falling right in line with where they would be on that matrix. And if you go down, you can just look at the graphs and see how that's pretty much been the pattern all along. This page just summarizes the time-weighted returns in terms of the total fund, which is the top block of information, and individual managers going down the line. Starting with bar graphs, you can see that we're talking about fairly small amounts of money here, but in terms of total percentage, but you can see since inception the portfolio has made money. That's the gold bar, and that has been true virtually in all periods, including the recent negative period, which was superior to the benchmarks. So a fund return again on the top line. One thing you might find a little odd is that the policy benchmark was negative 1.14. The percentile is 79, so how can we be so low in the percentile but still beat the benchmarks? And again, that's just basically that it reflects the conservative nature of the portfolio and the conservative approach the managers have been taking. Call it defensive approach. All of the managers are performing within the requirements that we've set out for them. And I will not go through all the manager's performance since we've really just done that. I did want to bring one more thing out. The last time I was here, you asked me to provide some fee information in the report. I wasn't able to get it into the report for this quarter. I had some compliance issues on that. But I did bring a separate handout for all the members of the committee, which illustrates the fees. I'm hoping that by the next time I'm here, I'll be able to actually have that in the report itself, and we'll just display it as part of this review. Any questions?
No, I don't think the negative is really a big surprise.
No.
I think we were all waiting for that.
We should be pretty well aware of it.
Yeah.
I think there's about 10 of them, so I'm not sure if we have one.
Get one to answer. All right.
So that's all I have for today.
Make a motion to approve?
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Mary, can you go to the last? Yeah, that. So this is really kind of redundant information. It just basically shows where our funds are. Majority of it is at SunTrust. We have a little bit in the SBA, $8 million something, and I think is it $5 million?
Yes.
From here for Florida Local Government Trust. That's about it. We're just depending on the investment managers that make us some money. All right. So that's really just for information. Anybody have anything else today we need to talk about? No? All right. We're done.
Thank you.